the BC Ombuds, because the BC Ombuds can't actually investigate and like intervene on cases. They can only review the outcomes of what has happened and do recommendations for future cases. But I'm like an actual investigative office that looks at present day complaints and cases would be, I think, hugely valuable.
Yep. And maybe there's a threshold where if a case is of a certain nature or a certain risk or a certain severity, it would be handled by that body, but smaller problems can be handled internally. Mm-hmm. I think financially that would make it more feasible. Yeah. Your point about the ethics in research, mm-hmm. I think, is particularly concerning given that we will be having a medical school at SFU soon, and that is going to include a lot more human subjects research. And so making sure that the university is well prepared to handle that in a way that is ethical and free of conflict of interest, I think, is important to everyone.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's talk about what students need to know when they are finding themselves caught up in this. And I think if you agree, maybe we'll break it up into two sections. Mm-hmm. One kind of like academic stuff, which I imagine sort of happens that people find out they're in trouble when they're told they're in trouble. And then a separate thing, you know, the, I think, perhaps more complicated issues around various relationships with supervisors and superiors. So in the academic questions, when a student gets notified that they're in trouble, they've done something wrong, or alleged to do something wrong, what should they do?
My first instinct would be to email Trish. And I recognize that not all students want to reach out for in-person contact and assistance. So I've made guides and breakdowns of policy that are available on my website through sfss.ca, services, student advocacy, that break down what to do, where to go, how each process works. But if you don't want to go that route, come talk to me. I can walk you through it. But generalized advice would be to keep everything in writing. I think Harjap will probably agree there. That if you are accused of an academic integrity violation, you should be able to meet with your instructor to talk about it before the official report is filed. And that is a hugely important piece of procedural fairness, that you have the right to respond to those allegations before it goes any further. And unfortunately, there's faculty that will skip that step. And a lot of things can just be cleared up in that initial meeting between a student and a faculty member. Once you've had that meeting, if an official report is filed, you have 3 weeks to file an appeal. And if you take anything from this chat, 3 weeks is the deadline for just about everything at SFU if you disagree with the decision that's been made. It's in tiny print behind two links, and I have been pushing to make that information way more obvious and upfront.
That's really fast when
it's fast.
The student's facing what probably for almost all of them is a super stressful experience. Yep.
And it's usually during exam time and you're writing papers and trying to finish and maybe your graduation is on the line. Like, it's never convenient. So that is the big piece. 3 weeks is that magic number. And if you go beyond that 3 weeks, they will almost never consider an appeal. Yeah.
I mean, I don't have much to add to that. Just aside from the fact that, like, I think going again to like Trish's early comment about contact, you know, the advocate right away, is also just, you know, sometimes, you know, to the point of like keeping everything in writing, which I echo as well, hugely important, doing things like timelines, right? Mm. Like in terms of like dates, what happened, when it happened. But also, like, I think in meeting with either of us, you might become aware of things that might be relevant to your case that you would have thought otherwise weren't. Right? Information, scenarios, what has happened. And I think just the ability to talk through what has happened with someone is hugely valuable for that reason, right? That you actually figure out, like, okay, you know, what, like, you just feel initially sometimes like this feels unfair, But because you don't really know policy and precedent and like how the university treats various cases, you might not kind of really be able to articulate why it's unfair. Mm. And that's why I think the value of the offices are really there, is that it really helps in that regard.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, let's talk about the other kind of more personal relationships type of scenarios that come up. Because in that situation, and the reason I wanted to separate it out is because often a student's sense that something's off or not right or maybe unfair is going to arise long before they get to the point of feeling they need to do file a formal complaint or enact some sort of process. And at the same time, I'm sure it's extremely difficult to deal with and sort of understand what they need to be doing. Mm-hmm. How can students navigate that? And what kind of resources, in addition to your offices, are available? Because I think, I imagine talking and advice early on when you think things aren't quite right would be super valuable to those students.
Yeah, I think similarly, for the same reasons, right? Like, you kind of don't know precedent, you don't know what is possible, understanding policy. So for those reasons, again, just echoing, like, meeting with an advocate or someone is useful. The one other thing I would just say is that if you have some trust and good relationships with other, you know, for sure your peers as students, but also potentially with faculty, like, is asking a few kind of, like, not, like, controversial, but just some questions about, hey, like, find out a little bit more. Just because I think in a lot of those cases, you find out, like, whether the person you're having this issue with, these kind of personal, like, whether it's faculty or someone else, like, there might be a pattern of behavior. Mm-hmm. There might be, like, sort of some awareness that people have about the issue. You know, again, right, like, whisper networks used a lot among women or non-male identified folks in the community around, like, sort of sexual predators or sexual violence issues have been more, you know, people always say are more effective than the policies because they actually protect people and build awareness. Similar stuff happens around just kind of like personal levels of like harassment and abuse that might not be sexual violence, but just other forms of it, exploitation or like sort of poor behavior. One of the things that like I've really pushed for in my role after my first year was trying to collectivize sort of knowledge mm-hmm. around like what's going on in departments and with certain faculty members without like necessarily like this approach of being like, oh, we need to like dig up stuff on the person. But just like if there's an awareness and then there's a pattern, we should know. Right. So I think that's the other part of it that I think it's really difficult to do because the university processes really individualize a complaint, right? Like they really want to just be like, okay, what's the issue? They'll focus it on a narrow policy. They'll focus it on a narrow single student case. They'll preach confidentiality over and over again so you don't talk to anyone, but it should be your right to talk to someone about the experiences that you have. So overcoming that stuff sometimes is a struggle. And again, why meeting with the advocacy office is it kind of helps people do that with confidence because we're not telling you to do anything that's like a violation of university policy. We're just telling you to do your due diligence to know what's going on in terms of those interactions you might be having, right? So,
right.
Yeah, I think I would add to that to sort of trust your gut. You'd be surprised how often your gut is telling you what you need to know. Document the concrete facts as well as how your feelings come from those facts, and that can sometimes be different. And if you feel like you can speak to the instructor of the course about whatever the issue is, if that doesn't feel right, perhaps you can talk to a TA. If that doesn't feel right, there's maybe a faculty member somewhere in your department who's been an ally in the past or that you get along with. And I also find that depending on the department, sometimes the academic advisors can be surprisingly helpful for these situations for undergrads, particularly in navigating sort of departmental personnel weirdness. I think those would be sort of my main points of advice there, and that it's okay to stick up for yourself. Mm-hmm. There absolutely is a power dynamic at play in most classrooms, and it's okay to stand up and say that this isn't okay. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes there's also odd cases where a student, for instance, reached out to me because in an assignment, they were transcribing material from an archive, and the student was concerned that that labor was going to be used by their professor in their research. And so I messaged the professor and said, I've received this concern. Is there anything that you would like to say and anything we could talk about here? And it turned out that it was completely unrelated to what she was studying, and it was really not an issue at all. But the student's concern was quite valid, but it just needed some clarification. And sometimes those conversations are hard to have.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, how do students get a hold of you, and how do they find the resources you guys have available for them? Trish, you're representing undergrads for the
Yes, if
Student
you're an undergrad and you need help, my email is studentadv.coord@sfss.ca, which is really annoying, and I'm working on changing it. but my website's probably easier to find. Go to sfss.ca, services, student advocacy, and all my contact info is there. You can book an appointment with me through that website. We can do it in person or remote or at a Starbucks or wherever. Pretty flexible that way.
Yeah. Yeah, and so my email address is advocacy@sfugradsociety.ca. So the last bit's all one word. We're on the second floor of the Maggie Benson building. The GSS offices are there, just a little bit past the bookstore. And my office is there. Again, reach out to me on email. We can similarly set up in person, virtual, whatever meetings. Vancouver campus if needed, Surrey campus if needed, all of that kind of stuff. So again, like I said, similar to Trish, like get in touch with us early. Sometimes, like, even if you're not thinking of doing anything and you just want to be like, hey, this thing's going on, I just want to talk to someone about it, totally okay to come and chat with us as well, right? Like, it sometimes is just helpful to, like, you know, throw ideas about what's going on with you to someone else that you want to talk about things confidentially with.
Great. Well, thank you for joining me here today, Trish Everett, Student Advocacy Coordinator for the Simon Fraser Student Society, and Harjot Gruel, Advocate and Policy Advisor for the SFU Graduate Student Society. Thanks for coming. I think this is a really important topic and some great information you've been able to share today.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for having us.
Great.
Scientific Feeder Watch is a community science bird counting program that thousands of birders participate in each year. Dr. Ashley Dayer, a conservation scientist, says the project is also a great opportunity for over one-third of birders with disabilities. Ashley leads a research team based on Project Feeder Watch data and says the project is readily accessible for most. And neurodiverse participants have shared how, with birding, their own disabilities become helpful tools.
We've done interviews with folks who are neurodiverse who will say, because of my autism, I'm an even better birder because I can remember things really well. Or people with ADHD saying, it's one of the times that I actually can zero in and stay really focused because my ability to hyper-focus plays a really great role.
Ashley and her team's main goal is to learn ways to increase inclusion and accessibility to Project Feeder Watch. Participation is low among the vision impaired and Black and brown people, but project organizers are hopeful that new incoming data will help change that.
We're trying to understand how to improve Project Feeder Watch so that it is a project that people want to be involved in and feel like they belong.
Learn more about the latest Project Feeder Watch findings on the new season of Bring Birds Back, available now in your favorite podcast app or at birdnote.org. I'm Jazzy Johnson.
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to two.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine, equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. To help bats and wind turbines coexist, researchers have taken inspiration from a moth. Bats have a keen sense of echolocation, but for some reason they do not avoid turbines. Some species even face population declines due to wind turbine strikes. To find ways to deter bats, researchers are learning from the bat's prey. When a tiger moth encounters a bat, it emits high frequencies that are thought to jam the bat's sonar.
So using that as the idea, people have built these bat deterrents that emit high-frequency noises, thinking that, you know, maybe it'll jam bats' echolocation.
Sarah Fritz of Texas State University is testing bat deterrents in a flight cage that's about as big as an Olympic swimming pool. She's found that these devices can be very effective for some species.
So that's awesome. However, physics of sound. Sound that those high frequencies does not travel very far.
And wind turbines are getting bigger and their blades longer. So a device on the turbine's tower may not emit a strong enough signal to keep bats away from the tips of the blades. So researchers are developing systems that can be installed right on the blades, so bats can be better protected as the wind industry grows.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday. You heard that right, Monday, from 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
The staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you a jolly, merry, happy, joyful, fantastic, exciting, fancy, magnificent, remarkable, special, white, sparkling, terrific, stunning, festive, and wonderful holiday season.
Join me, Robin, every Friday at noon for Roots and Berries. Tune in to hear bluegrass, old-time music, and other rootsy little nuggets with a focus on Canadian players, singers, and pickers. That's Roots and Berries, Fridays over the noon hour, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Hello, this is Boris Chassaigne. To get a feel on what's happening across the country, listen to Viewpoints. For reports, interviews, and documentaries on politics, arts and culture, the environment, housing, and more. Thanks to 30 journalists stationed in the Canadian provinces and territories. Local news nationwide. Mondays at 4:30 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM and streaming online at cjsf.ca.